This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Last weekend, another shooting took place involving police in the African-American community. A Black veteran killed three law enforcement officers and wounded three others in Baton Rouge, a city that continues to be in turmoil after officers shot and killed Alton Sterling on July 5th. Other events in St. Paul and Dallas have continued to increase tensions between law enforcement and the African-American community and spark protests across the country, including here in La Crosse. Joining us today to talk about local relations between police and the African-American community are Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police Department, Valjean Adams, co-founder of the African-American Mutual Assistance Network, and Isaiah Thomas, a senior at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse from Milwaukee. And I just want to start by having each of you kind of explain a little bit about your background. So, Captain Melby, we'll start with you.
Well, I'm Captain Jason Melby, born and raised in La Crosse. Been with the La Crosse Police Department since 1993 as a civilian, 95 as a sworn member. Over the course of my career, several different duties, worked my way through the ranks. I'm currently a captain in our Professional Standards Bureau.
And Valjean, you know, tell me a little bit about the African American Mutual Assistance Network.
Well, the African American Mutual Assistance Network was born out of a concern for African Americans in this area. My husband's originally from South Carolina, Charleston, and I'm a Long Island, New York girl. He retired from Winona State. We've been in the area about 25 years, saw a need to improve the quality of life for this group of people and wanted to help in whatever way that we could. And so out of that desire was born that organization.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Valjean, I understand that you also have a unique perspective on current events, because I know that your brother was also, a member of the police that was a victim of violence against the police. Do you mind sharing us a little bit about that story?
My brother was killed in a hostage situation in suburbs of Los Angeles in 2008. He was a captain for the LAPD SWAT department. Ironically, there are some of the local police officers who remember him because he conducted a SWAT training in Green Bay maybe a year or two before his passing. And he was just a very special person, and that uniqueness about him translated into his work. So he was a very compassionate officer and just had a different perspective of the people that he was both policing and protecting. He died instantly, so he didn't suffer, and he also had a children's program that expanded to Carson, South Central Los Angeles, Compton, and Watts, started initially just by himself, and then as people found out about it, other officers joined him and donated money. At the time he died, the number had grown to 1,500 children, which he called the Glory Kids, and he just did a lot for them, bought book bags, paid utility bills, bought lunches, brought them to church on Sunday, and admonished them to be good citizens and obey the law, because on Monday he was back to Officer Simmons and not Randy, and they really loved him.
Has that, do you think, impacted the way that recent events and tensions, the way that you kind of process those?
Well, I'm on both sides of the fence, I would say. I have empathy for those and understanding for those who are dealing with a loss. It was a great loss. He was 51. He was in excellent shape, and he said goodbye to his family and you know, went to get the bad guy who had killed many members of his family. And before he got there at 12, and before 12:30, arrived, he was dead. So it wasn't something we could prepare for. And it left a really big hole in our personal lives, but in the community and among the SWAT officers as well. He was the first SWAT officer in the history of SWAT in California to be killed, and the origin of SWAT under Daryl Gates started there. So it was a really big deal. His death was a really big deal. So I understand both sides. I think having him for a brother and being witness to how he policed impacted my life, because it was a policing with compassion rather than a beating down, and so people just really respected him.
And Isaiah, you know, give us a little bit about your background and how that has gives you a unique perspective also.
Well, I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I went to Brown Deer High School, very diverse high school. Milwaukee is a very diverse area. It's segregated in a sense with certain groups of people living in certain areas. I've never really been exposed to an area that's predominantly white until I came to La Crosse as a first-year student back in 2013. So that was a unique experience in itself, but outside of that, working in different areas as a build manager for rec sports on campus or interacting with other programs and just seeing different sides of everything and having conversations that are tougher conversations, whether it's about race or other identities, has really opened my eyes to a lot. And in a sense, I would say I wasn't sheltered, but what I was exposed to back at home is far different from what I'm exposed to now. I've been an EMT for a little over a year now. And working closely with police officers and coming here and doing some things and some work with police officers here. It's been hard seeing a lot that's going on in the news currently, one being a black man, and then two, understanding that how hard the job can be from accounts from people that I know that are on police departments. One thing that I always say is you can be pro-black and pro-cop. It's not pro-black, anti-cop. You know, or vice versa. So,
we have seen an enormous amount of violence this month alone in Baton Rouge, in St. Paul, in Dallas, and in Baton Rouge again. I mean, you know, Jason, what do you think is sparking just so much violence recently?
Well, obviously, each community is slightly different. And to speak as to what one community is experiencing versus another is very difficult. And a lot of policing really starts at the inroads and the relations that the police department makes with the community on the front end, not after a major incident. I would say that's one of the primary things that us at the La Crosse Police Department strive to do. We'd like to be involved and be at the table before we have issues. And after the issues arise, we're put in a situation where we're asked questions and answering questions like this in regards to situations in other parts of the country. And it's difficult to speak to that. It's difficult to say what the community in Baton Rouge felt about their police department beforehand, what the black community thought about the police department beforehand. And so it's tough to answer the question.
Valjean, you know, what's your perspective on these things? You know, what do you think is driving, you know, such a reoccurrence of violence recently?
I kind of would compare it to a dandelion weed that's in your yard that you want to get rid of. If you don't address the fact or even confess that there is a dandelion weed, and then be very aggressive to get to the root, then each time you mow your lawn, and by the time you mow it again, the weed's going to be back. And so I think that people across the board are hesitant for whatever reason, or afraid for another reason, to actually address this weed, if you will. And because it has gone such a long period of time, as far as I feel, far back from the last 2 weeks, it's gone on, the imbalance, the misunderstandings, the hate, the lack of communication, and all of those things have just perpetuated for such a long time. I feel that now we're at explosion because we didn't act proactively when we first felt or had the inclination that something's wrong. It's kind of like sweeping dirt under the carpet. Well, you don't see it. People that come to your house don't see it. You can't smell it, but you know it's there. So your house is not clean until you get rid of the dirt that's under the carpet. And so I think there's just been dirt under the carpet and that weed growing for a really long time. And until everybody involved, both sides, is able to confess it, address it, and take action, not talk about it, I think we'll have more of the same because it's reached the boiling pot, that boiling point. When you're cooking macaroni and you just know, okay, in about 2 seconds it's going to boil over. So I put a little butter in it and that brings the boil down. But if you just sit on the couch and watch the pot, you can bet your bottom dollar it's going to boil over. And then you've got this huge mess. So we've just been watching it just boil, and no one's done anything about it. I think the time for talking about it has really passed, and we have to just seriously say, this is what it is. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to fix it?
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about relations between the African American community and law enforcement in La Crosse. We're here with Val Jean Adams from the African American Mutual Assistance Network, Isaiah Thomas, a UWL senior from Milwaukee, and La Crosse Police Captain Jason Melby. And Isaiah, you know, I think that talking about these events and definitely media coverage of these events has definitely increased in the past few years. You know, how do you think that has played a part into, you know, what's happening now and, you know, people really calling for action?
Initially, when I first got here, we had conversations, but it was always in-group conversations with people who identified as a person of color. Where these situations directly impacted that person.
And when you mean coming here, you mean UWL or La Crosse?
UW La Crosse.
Okay.
And where I could be sitting in my room watching CNN and then something happens and how I can't just walk away from that situation and something that I carry with me. The end group that I talk about, again, is the people of color, whether it's in our multicultural office or a campus climate office, and those folks I can have conversations with. But as the years have gone by and I've been here longer, we started to branch out more, and these conversations are becoming more prevalent and relevant too, with how much is going on in the country. And it's like now you can't say that you don't know what's going on because it's right there in front of you. It's all over social media, it's all over the news, and these conversations are happening all the time around you. You have access to this information, and you really have nowhere else to turn. And now with students on campus and people in the community, now they're saying, like Val just said, was it's time to take action because we've been talking for a long time. And I've only been talking about this since I got here for the past 3 or so years. But this conversation has been happening for a while, a very long time.
You know, I think that we can all recognize that the Black Lives Matter movement that started as a Twitter campaign, you know, has definitely been at the forefront of a lot of these, you know, conversations, sparking a lot of protests. Isaiah, do you feel like young people are playing kind of a crucial role in a lot of these calls to action?
I would say so. I was talking to my grandmother a couple weeks ago, and she was just talking about the energy of the people of her generation and how back then she used to do the sort of things that we're doing now, the protesting and getting out there and trying to be heard. But now she's at the age where it's like she's going to be on the back burner and cooking the meal so we have the energy to keep getting out there. But I do think that my generation, the younger generation, has the ability to get out there and make effective change as long as we stick with it. It's tough because you do become tired. There are points where I've checked out from school. I'm just like, I can't do this right now because I watch a news clip. And like I said, I don't have the ability to walk away. And I have to carry that in every little thing that happens throughout the day, from microaggressions on. I deal with that, and it's tough. But the support system that you have from those around you, whether it's allies or other people of color that I consider friends, in a sense, we've gotten to the point where it's like the fight will never be over until, you know, we keep pushing harder and harder and harder, you know. So, yeah, it's tough. But I think they do have an impact on that. And the conversation when you say Black Lives Matter and where that goes and what does that actually mean? Because you always are counteracted with all lives matter, especially with younger folks. And it's like, well, do you know what you're saying when you say that? That's just like if you call it the fire department because the house is on fire. And then the neighbor says, well, you're not putting water on my house. Just think about that, you know.
And Valjean, you know, what is your perspective on how the younger generation is you know, impacting conversations and calls to action?
I think the African community, African-American community, for a while, we had a space of time where I don't think our young people were aware, they weren't engaged, and there was a distance between the civil rights movement and then the youth, the young people that have come up now. So that middle generation, I think, just kind of went along and didn't care so much, didn't have an awareness of their background, where they were going, what they wanted to do, and how they wanted to continue on the backs of those civil rights leaders to make themselves better in a world or in a nation where it's hard as an African American to excel, even if you're educated, it doesn't bear much significance, and so to be able to have the tenacity to keep pushing forward like Isaiah, in the light of it, I'm proud that they have gotten their wits about them, so to speak, because all of those old folks are gone or they're too old to carry on. But that movement, that time, did yield improvement in our lives, but it wasn't the end of the story. And I think a lot of people who are not African American, who don't have that history, who don't live what the life that we live on a daily basis, don't understand that was not the end of the story. The you know, we didn't finish the book. You have a group that are engaged and inspired and are regaining hope and are articulate and want to see just a balance. And then you have that group that is reckless and hateful and doesn't contain the skills that maybe an Isaiah has developed as how he's going to go about improving things and improving his life. And again, I understand both perspectives. I was raised in a family that taught hope and taught tenacity and taught discipline and taught God and taught faith. But the person who doesn't have those things to hold on to inspire them, to encourage them to get up and still be fair in their thinking while moving forward with a cause, then that's the exploding person. That's the explosive person. I don't condone the explosion, but I understand the explosion.
And Captain Melby, you know, I was asking Isaiah about how, you know, the Black Lives Matter Twitter campaign has really impacted a lot of things that are happening now. But, you know, I think technology has also impacted police departments as well. And, you know, the fact that almost everybody now has a cell phone camera and can record as a police officer. How do you see technology impacting your daily work?
Well, obviously, it's changed the way many law enforcement agencies do business. And when I say that, it maybe doesn't change the way they police, but administratively, you're addressing a lot of different aspects of squad cameras and body cameras and everything like that. And for the last 20 years, we at the police department have had some form of squad video. And to a degree, there's an expectation that our officers are going to have cameras, that they're going to have some video, or there's going to be some audio of an incident. So that's one of the largest changes from the aspect of being in the law enforcement profession, is that there is an expectation that even us as the law enforcement agency will have video of any incident that we're involved in. That's beyond the general public having their cell phones and their cameras with them, or security cameras. Downtown La Crosse just had 32 safe cams put in, and having, you know, the proliferation of the technology throughout the general community. The expectation is for law enforcement to have it for some level of transparency of how we do our job.
And what is your take on that? Is that a good thing? Is that bad? Is it gray? You know, what?
No, I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's bad at all. The positives are is that what's really happening is getting captured. There's a couple downfalls. It doesn't provide that 360-degree full sensory perception that an officer may have of what's happening at a scene. It's a 2D capturing of an incident. It may not capture all the details that the officer is sensing or seeing or anything like that. That would be the one downfall. The positive is the transparency for law enforcement perspective. The video is there. You can see what the officer's saying. You can see what the officer's doing. You can hear and see what some of the people they're interacting with is being captured as. So, I mean, those are two of the major, you know, positive and negatives that go along with it.
That's Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police Department, here with us today to talk about local relations between police and the Black community. Also joining our conversation is Valjean Adams, co-founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network, and Isaiah Thomas, a senior at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse from Milwaukee. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And so, Jason, has current events sparked any conversations at the La Crosse Police Department or, you know, from your perspective, impacted the department?
You know, the interesting thing is we talk about the recent events. In looking at it, how we conduct business and some of our focus and shifting focus to be more progressive in how we approach our relationships with the Black community and the community in general. I just don't want to isolate and say Black community in La Crosse, how we actually engage in the La Crosse community. There shouldn't be separate communities. And so when I look at it, it wasn't just this recent shooting or that shooting. When Ferguson happened, there were some significant shifts in law enforcement and reports that came out. The president's report on 21st century policing, and there were six pillars laid out for law enforcement to effectively do their job.
And you're referencing Michael Brown, who was shot in Ferguson, Missouri,
yes,
in August 2014.
Yeah, so referring to Ferguson, there was some significant information that came out at that time. And at the La Crosse Police Department, we started changing our focus on some of our training and community engagement. At that time, it shouldn't take repeated incidents and repeated shootings and hard relations for us to at least have a little bit of introspective to look at ourselves and how we do our jobs and how we interact with our community as a whole to change things and do things better. Everybody can do things better. Everybody can change a little bit of how they do business to do things better. Isaiah said something that I think is important early on, is that supporting and moving for better relations within the Black community and supporting law enforcement are not mutually exclusive items. These are not something where you support one, therefore you're against the other. And I think as a whole within the police department, we need to see that as our goal as well, is that you just can't have I am for this, which automatically means I'm against that. Our goal should be to serve the community, the La Crosse community, as a whole, whichever race, gender, anything, equally as wholes, one community. So,
and Valjean, you know, has recent events impacted the African American Mutual Association and, you know, the work you're trying to do there and the goal there?
Well, one of the things that the African American Mutual Assistance Network does, one of the programs, is the Next Step program, and it's a combination, the Next Step and We the People. So the We the People is the political part of that program, and the goal is to reach the high school student, not exclusively the black students, but because there's a greater need generally with that population, to reach that group, to enlighten them, to understand that they are a part of a community. That community is a part of a state, and that state is a part of a country that they live in, so that they feel some inclusiveness and that they belong to someone, belong to something, that someone cares about them. And that kind of can go into the Black Lives Matter movement, because the majority of these kids, so we're talking about kids that are between 16, young people maybe in their early 20s, they actually do not feel that. They're viewed as a throwaway group of people, that no one cares, that there's no equality, that there's no hope, that there's no promise of a future any different from what they know generationally. So it's a big task, but my husband, along with a very dear friend, Professor Sam Senta, is involved in this program. And there's a lot of trust building that goes along with this, because these are not a group of people that are that can easily trust. They've been denied, and they've been sucked in, so to speak, and disappointed. So they approach everything and everyone with a great deal of caution, and you have to prove yourself to them. Do you really care about my life? Is this a game? You know, when's the rabbit coming? I knew this was a joke, because no one has ever cared about me. So That's one of the things that we're trying to accomplish with this particular group. And then I think the Isaiah group is the next group above this group, and they're on their way to making a difference. But this younger group is just hurt and disappointed and very angry. Hurt, disappointed, and very angry.
Valjean Adams, co-founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network, is here with us today to talk about local relations between law enforcement and the African American community in light of recent events across the country. Also joining us in studio is Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police Department and Isaiah Thomas, a senior at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse from Milwaukee. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about how recent shootings have impacted La Crosse and what's being done to address tensions in the community. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how recent events involving law enforcement and the African American community are impacting La Crosse. After a black veteran killed three officers and wounded three more in Baton Rouge last weekend, tensions are high between police and the African American community throughout the U.S. Joining us today to talk about what the relationship is like here in La Crosse is Isaiah Thomas, a senior at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police Department, and Val Jean Adams, co-founder of the African American Mutual Assistance Network. And Valjean, you know, what do you think the relationship is like between police and the African-American community in La Crosse?
I have had a good experience, but like I said, we've been in the area for a really long time. When my husband 3 years ago, I guess that's when the collaborative spirit really got started, was 3 years ago, well, 2 years ago, when we decided we wanted to have a Juneteenth celebration citywide. And I said to my husband, "You want to do a what?" And he said, "No," he said, "we want to have a celebration, a Juneteenth celebration, and we're just going to see, you know, where it takes us and how it turns out." And so we were pleasantly surprised at the support that we got from the mayor's office, and the police department, and the fire department for the very first celebration. And then we just had it again a second time, and there was a huge improvement in the amount of people that attended. And so I don't have a direct complaint about them. I'm aware of some issues that took place in the department a little while ago. I am proud of them for taking a proactive a point of view, getting things in order, changing things on their own, you know, as Jason said, rather than waiting for something else to happen. And that's the kind of proactive actions that need to be taken. And I think as far as police departments go, they're making a really good effort, and I think that goes a long way. But as I said before, gaining the trust of a community of people that has not been given a reason to trust is a slow process. So it has to be just a repetition. It's kind of teaching children their alphabets. They're not going to get it the first time, and you just have to keep repeating it and repeating it. And so I think that they'll continue doing that, and I think in time the blacks that live in this community will see, well, they're different. They're not the same, and I'm happy about that. But I don't expect it to happen overnight. I don't think it'll happen overnight.
And Captain Melby, you know, what's your perspective on this relationship?
Well, obviously, we've talked a lot about the national events that lead to law enforcement agencies like the La Crosse Police Department that take a little bit of introspection, look at how we do business, what additional training can our officers have, what is a review of what our the use of force reports looking like for our agency, and where are we participating, and where can we participate to make better inroads in our community as a whole. And Valjean talked about working together for the first Juneteenth day. Let's be honest here. The La Crosse Police Department has no delusional expectations that by participating with Juneteenth Day, we have now solved any sort of relation issues there might be in the community. This is just the beginning of us making inroads in an area of community that we maybe haven't made before. And by participating and bringing resources to the table and actively supporting an event like that is just a small step in the right direction. It's how our officers do the job on a daily basis that needs to be right. And when there's a time where it doesn't matter what uniform I'm wearing or what color somebody's skin is where the community relations and some of the hard feelings are going to be set aside. When it doesn't make a difference that I'm wearing blue. I'm there to help. Somebody can come to me. And just as well, law enforcement work in the street does not look at somebody, the color of somebody's skin, and say, there might be something suspicious here. That is where a community as a whole, I believe, personally, needs to be. And I think we've taken some steps. We've taken some of the studies and the reports that are out there with recommendations, took them to heart, increased our training in areas, specifically fair and impartial policing. We're talking about implicit biases that people have, hidden biases that people have, how to address it and how to effectively police and not let those influence how we do our job. You know, so there's some things that we have done to really try to put our best foot forward. And like I said, it's no illusion here that by helping out with Juneteenth once a year is now we've got our whole relations in with the Black community solved. That's just part of it.
And, you know, I know that recently the La Crosse Police Department has started community resource officers, and by creating that program, maybe strengthening, you know, ties to the community and having people in particular neighborhoods to develop a direct relationship with a neighborhood. You know, has that also, helped play into helping create better relationships with the Black community in La Crosse?
Well, I would say that anytime that we can have our officers in closer contact with any member of the community, we are having better service. So by having officers that are dedicated to particular areas of town specifically provides definitely an avenue to have more direct contact and have more meaningful contact with the community as a whole, whether it is the Black community living in a particular neighborhood or the homeless populations in the downtown area that they are interacting with on a regular basis. That it is an important way for us to get input from the community and act on it and have those close personal relationships. You know, one of the first pillars in the president's report was building trust and legitimacy. Absence of meaningful contact, non-mandatory law enforcement contact where we're there taking enforcement action or dealing with a call for service, it is those contacts outside of that realm that create that level of legitimacy and trust in. At least that's the beginning of it, at least I think.
Valjean?
I just wanted to say absolutely that I agree. You don't want to be the officer that's only on the scene when there's a problem, when you're arresting someone or there's a drug bust. But just, you know, years and years ago, just, oh, you know, that's Officer so-and-so or that's Captain so-and-so. And that's what we need to evolve to. And then the trust will come because your perception changes. With that consistency, your perception eventually is going to change, and that'll make a difference in the relationships that we're trying to build.
You know, a lot of the recent events that have sparked protests have unfortunately been the deaths of young Black men at the hands of the police or the police at the hands of, you know, young Black men. Isaiah, how has that impacted you, you know, personally as, someone who is a young Black man?
I guess the way that I navigate each day, as I keep talking about the news and being witness to that stuff from a TV screen or through social media, and carrying that with me. Like, of course, it's going to be a heavy weight, and sometimes I have to check out or check in with myself and then check out with others when having this conversation, especially if it's those who don't understand firsthand what that feels like. So who I'm talking about is white people. So when I'm having these conversations, like, well, I understand you want to talk about it and you're empathetic, but at the same time, right now for me, and it's not the best time. So maybe a later date we'll have this conversation, or maybe not. It all depends on how I'm feeling, because I never want to get to that point where I check out completely again, and it's like I can't function because everything is just too heavy.
Do you sometimes feel like you have a target on your back?
I wouldn't say I have a target on my back, but just like Val was talking about, being cautious. There are certain police officers in the La Crosse Police Department who I've grown to have a relationship with, certain captains or certain officers that I see on a consistent basis, and I know them by officer so-and-so. But even then, when I'm out and about, and like say I just leave my house, saw something on TV, when I'm out and about and I see a police officer, it's like, yeah, I'm gonna wave. But at the same time, you in the back of your head, you think, what do they think of me because of my skin tone and the area that I'm in? How many interactions do they have with certain folks, you know? So it's something that I do think about, and it's not just police officers, it's other people too, that say when we had the Confederate flag incident and last year on campus, and when you see a truck and it has that flag painted across the back window, it's like, okay, this truck is going by, and then they circle back around. Did they do that because I'm walking here or what? So being very cautious in my interactions and how I carry myself, but also knowing who I am and what conversations I can have with folks.
Absolutely. And, you know, Captain Melby is, as we've seen, several shootings of police officers now being targeted. Do you start to feel like you have a target on your back?
Well, obviously, when something like that happens, law enforcement across the board becomes a little bit of heightened awareness. And so we obviously have concerns when something like that happens because it, to a degree, kind of comes out of nowhere. So I won't say that we feel like we have a target on our back. We just need to be more vigilant when we're doing our jobs and a little bit more self-aware. I don't know what more to say to that topic.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about relations between the African-American community and law enforcement in La Crosse. We're here with Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police Department, Isaiah Thomas, a UWL senior from Milwaukee, and Valjean Adams from the African-American Mutual Assistance Network. And Valjean, you know, I think you have said, you know, action, it's now is the time for action, you said earlier in the conversation. You know, what are steps that we as a nation, we as a community here in La Crosse can take to start healing and start taking that action? I know you've said that, you know, increasing that, you know, level of respect and that trust between communities. But, you know, what other steps can be taken?
I think people as a whole tend to stay in their safe space. This is my safe space, and are reluctant to venture out from that space. I think this is going to take a venturing out from that space. I need to find out about Captain Melby. I need to get to know him as a person, not just a police officer, but as a person. And I want him to get to know me as a person, my likes, my dislikes, my culture, why I may laugh at something that he doesn't think it funny, and vice versa. All those little things that bring people together. I think people just need to move out. I think as we conquer the fears that we have about each other and the premonitions and certainly the stereotypical thinking and the classifying that all of us do on both sides, I think as we move out from that, and only if we can move out from that, and are we ever going to find out, well, you know, he's really a great guy. We both like to fish. We'll find out the things that we have in common. Maybe I'll make him a sweet potato pie, and maybe he'll make me his favorite dish. And we'll just be people. We'll just be people that want to be treated equally, that really want to say, I can own what the Constitution says, that all men are created equal. Because right now, some of us don't feel equal. We haven't felt equal for 250 years. So, in the bottom line, when the pot boils down, there are things that we share as human beings. We want to live a decent life. We want to be away from crime. We want our kids to go to college. We want to worship together. We want to shop in a supermarket without someone staring at us or calling us out of our name. It's really not that much. We want government to be equal for us. We want to have due process under the law. So it's not so different as we think it is. You know, we want our kids to be safe. When they go to school, we want them to come back. It's just so many things that are the same. But if we never take the time to get out of that safe space and just talk to each other and just be a little vulnerable, this is who I am. I don't think we'll ever get to that. I think that's the first step, and then that step will move on to something else and to something else. But as long as we're all polarized, then what we think is happening, our minds just kind of takes over. Everything's are exaggerated. I think the media, not all of it, but most of it, just keeps that pot stirred up, and there are so many misconceptions. And then we go to bed and we're afraid, and the next morning we're not talking, and it's just insane. And so I think moving out of that space and saying, hi, my name is Val. Hi, my name is Jason. How are you? Oh, where are you from? Or what do you do for a living? How long have you been? Have you got any kids? Just simple life, I think, should be the same for everybody. And part of the anger is because disproportionately it's not. And it's got to be. It's got to be. Everybody's got to be equal, or nobody's got to be equal. There's got to be peace for everybody, or there's going to be peace for nobody. And we sometimes feel as though it doesn't affect me. So I'm just going to stay in this little corner because what's going on over there doesn't affect me. And that nothing could be further from the truth, because ultimately we're all connected in one way or another, or we will be. We will be. So when we come together, we just want that to be a positive event.
And Jason, you know, do you think that that's achievable for La Crosse as a community?
Well, obviously, law enforcement, by its nature, we deal with people in situations where, quite honestly, they don't want to be dealing with us frequently. So I don't have any fantasy premonition that there'll ever be a time where everybody is always happy with how we do our job, because, quite frankly, just by the nature of what we do leads to someone, unfortunately, being happy, unhappy, I mean. So it's something where it's a strange situation. We would much rather see better relations within all aspects of our community. And I think Val hit on a point here where if we get to know each other better, the legitimacy of the La Crosse Police Department is going to be based on the trust that she develops by getting to know the members of our agency, that all members of our community, including the Black members of our community, get to know of our agency. We have got a lot of good men and women working in the La Crosse Police Department that unfortunately deal with many people in difficult situations. And it doesn't lend itself for people to get to know each other on a basis like that. But I think Val definitely hit on a point where getting to know each other makes a huge difference. And that's where the neighborhood resource officer piece comes into play. And so do I think we can hit a level where everybody's happy? I don't think you'll see it, but I think we can improve on it, and I think we can do a better job in the community as a whole.
Recently, we saw a march held downtown in La Crosse to kind of, you know, raise awareness to the Black Lives Matter movement here, and one of the organizers said that, you know, he wanted to start this march to, because he feels like La Crosse is largely silent on these issues a lot of times. Valjean, what's your perspective on that? Do you think La Crosse stays silent sometimes?
I think it does sometimes. Yeah, I do. I think it's a sometimes a showcase town where you have a perception that you are trying to promote, but that's not what's going on behind the scene. So I think it is. I think we have the ability to be a Switzerland and be neutral. But I don't think these are neutral days. I think you have to take a side. I think we're in our age now where you have to take a side. You're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. But you can't sit on the fence. These aren't sit on the fence issues. You've got to be one or the other.
We've been talking with Valjean Adams from the African American Mutual Assistance Network, Captain Jason Melby from the La Crosse Police, and Isaiah Thomas, a senior at UWL, about relations between the Black community and police officers here in La Crosse in light of recent events that have increased tensions across the country. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producers for Newsmakers is John Gatto. Our senior news editor and producer is John Davis, and Matt Clark is our student producer. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.